Busy city life makes it hard to think about and work at integrating our faith with our lives. Welcome to the Cathedral Podcast, produced and hosted by Jenny Ho Huan. Each episode, we want to help you relate core Christian truths to your daily life. Whether it's science, philosophy, cultural trends, or life stories, we bring you authentic and unrehearsed conversations to spark insight and strengthen your faith and your life.
Hi, Jenny here. Welcome to this episode of the Cathedral Podcast. Today, we are going to talk about intimacy in marriage. And I'm very happy to have with me Gary and Joanna. Joanna is CEO of Focus on the Family. Mm-hmm. Gary, of course, is married to Joanna. And if you have not seen them on the YouTube or on the Focus on the Family Facebook page, you should go look at some of these cute videos the two of them have where they talk about subjects related to intimacy in marriage. But today in this conversation, we are going to take it further beyond those videos. So thank you for being here with us.
Thank you for having us.
Yes.
So let's start with those videos where the two of you are sitting on the couch and you're talking about different aspects of intimacy. What motivated you guys to do that? And what does healthy intimacy between a man and his wife look like?
I think for us, for the videos, the idea came about because we've been doing marital talks or marriage talks for so many years. And it's always the same question that was being asked. And we thought, how about we put together a video and have publicized, and if people can view it, they're going to hear what they would hear.
Right.
Otherwise, they're coming to our marriage workshops as well.
But nice. It was also very much, like, I think, motivated by the trends and the research that Focus on the Family has done. So one of the things that we found out, because we do what's called the whole life inventory, and to date it's like covered about over 30 churches and 13,000 over respondents. And we found out that actually a good quarter of our marriages in church are probably contemplating divorce in the recent months. And on top of that, when we asked couples who are married in the church to rate their marriage, we found that a good 56% of them are actually what would be considered at risk of marital distress.
Right.
Yeah, and I think that that's something that we... You know, usually when we do stuff, it's always on parenting, but we figured that maybe it's really time to address issues in marriage because couples really need help. They need encouragement. They need to just sometimes know that what they're going through is pretty normal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, of course, you know, to help inspire them because marriage is a lifelong commitment and it can be a rough journey. Yeah. So I think all of us do need that encouragement, inspiration at certain junctures in our marriage, especially when things are getting a little bit rough.
Yes.
And of course, practical tips. And so that's what we sought to do, particularly, I think, in the area of sexual intimacy, which is seldom talked about in the church. Actually, seldom talked about, full stop. In our society, being a very Asian conservative society, but especially in the church.
Yeah. Yes. I think growing up in church also, I remember one of the questions I always asked is, how would I know this is the person for me? You know, and no one could really give me an answer other than, you know, like, you just pray like, and then you'll know, which didn't quite help a person who came from a family of dysfunction where I didn't know what a healthy marriage was going to be like. So a lot of it was just, how would I know? People said, read a book. I read the books that didn't quite help also, so I didn't need to talk to someone. And along the way, we thankfully there were mentors. But when it came to sexual intimacy itself, most of the marriage workshops that we attended, even by the church, did not cover that other than give you a few sheets of paper. Oh, nah, you're going to read this.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. I have to confess as a pastor, I've been guilty of doing that myself after several sessions of premarital preparation. Yeah, the few sheets pertaining to your sex life, go and read it yourself.
Yeah, but the only thing is that I think in today's modern society, so we have Google, right? Where we all refer to, whether Christian or not.
Yes.
And with that, right, we... as Christians, we're actually going outside of the church to seek help and advice on what sexual intimacy looks like and how to improve our sex life as a couple. And I think a lot of it, you know, if we think about it, if the originator of sex is God Himself, then, you know, just as if, you know, you buy a piece of equipment and something goes wrong, right? You go back to the original manufacturer. Yeah. You won't ask, like, the vendor or whoever, like, you know, what's wrong with this? I mean, the best advice and help will come from the originator of it. And so I think we do need to go back to the originator of sex as Christians to really find out like what is God's design on sex. And I think that's where we felt that really there's a need to talk about this a little bit more in the church, especially if Christians themselves are starting to go outside of the church because they don't know where, that the church has that expertise and help. And they're starting to go outside of the church to get their advice, which can be a little bit misplaced.
Yeah, yeah. And some are pretty dubious too. I know for a fact that a lot of Christians read 50 Shades of Grey. under the readership, kind of research that was done. So when you talk about then sexual intimacy, going back to God who designed it, what would you say are a few key things that maybe every couple should bear in mind?
I think
whether they're going through good times or whether they're going through
bad times. I think first and foremost, it's just this whole idea that sex is good. In fact, it's great. And as social research would also back up what the Bible says, the best sex is that within a committed monogamous marriage, right? And so I think as Christians, sometimes the only messages we hear about sex is that don't do it. You know, and so there's a connotation of sex being bad because it's something that you don't
dangerous,
you don't talk about. You know, and all these like terrible consequences that could go wrong. But we don't talk about the fact that when God designed sex, he designed it for not just procreation, which can be just functional, right? Yeah. But he designed it really for pleasure. Between husband and wife is the greatest, deepest level of intimacy that can be shared between two persons. And that's because it happens within the protection of marriage, committed marriage. I mean, not marriage as popular these days, but committed marriage bound by covenant, you know, where we promise each other to walk through good times, bad times, even if we right now, no, don't think that our sexual life is the best, but we are committed to see it through. And that commitment, that lifelong commitment, actually gives us the time to perfect our sexual intimacy.
That's a very good point that you raise about giving yourself the time, because life will have its moments. And sometimes you just have to ride out the moments. And then because you are still there for each other, you can then turn a corner and enter a new phase in your relationship. But if you back away from the relationship, you will never know the possibility of something redemptive or great happening around the corner, right?
Because
and then actually if you back away and you start a relationship all over again, you literally have to start all over again. It's a lot of hard work.
I think one of the best advice I got when we were going through marriage prep before we got married was when the pastor asked us to remove the word divorce from our vocabulary. You know, erase it, that it will never be used no matter how hard or what difficult moments we actually experience. And I think that has actually helped because it made us be committed. And I think commitment is like that. Just like we are committed to God, there are days we don't feel like worshipping God, but because we are committed, the emotions, the feelings return.
Right.
Same way in the relationship, in the marriage, some days it's not all happy, happy, wonderful feeling, but because we're committed, the emotions again return, and because we're committed.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we once read this definition of intimacy, and so they did a play on the pronunciation of the word. I don't know if you heard this, you know. So intimacy is actually into me, see. So you see me, right? And the more you see me, because you're married to me, you see the me
good
that
and
wakes
the bad
up,
and
you know,
the ugly,
disheveled with like bad breath. Yeah. And you see me, you know me, and we all know that the more we get to know a person, friction happens, right? Because you know, no two persons are exactly alike. And so you see me, you know me, and yet you choose me. Yeah, and I think it's that security that gives us the confidence, gives us, you know, the space in marriage to really explore what intimacy really, really looks like. Because we know that, you know, much as you see all the ugly and the bad in me, but you still choose me.
You're still there for me.
Yeah,
you're still
that's
sticking
right.
around.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an important message. Even if sometimes the relationship gets really rough and you're not even able to verbalize those things anymore, the fact that you have physically stayed on in that marriage does speak a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, does give that security. I agree. Yeah. But so many things can go south. The force of gravity on all of our bodies, for one.
Yes, yes. So that's something we, I think, after 19 years of marriage, are still learning. Marriage is not a given. You know, you have to constantly work at it. If you want a great marriage, actually everybody can have a great marriage, but it requires hard work. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're right. I like the wordplay, the into me see thing. It's very real. So, but society is changing so much, right? Mm-hmm. And we seem to have decoupled sexual intimacy from other aspects of intimacy. Because intimacy is like this broader, broader thing where you feel safe with someone, you are able to be vulnerable and feel like somehow you're still safe. Maybe at that moment you don't feel fully accepted, but you know that it's not like you are rejected. You're not like being pushed away, you know, and there's that space to work things out. That's really at the heart of intimacy, that sense of interdependence,
Yes,
right?
Yes.
So sexual intimacy is one part of it.
Correct.
What are some of the other aspects that reinforce the sexual intimacy?
I think we need to remember that sex is just one component, but there's emotional intimacy, there is intellectual intimacy, there is what are other kinds of intimacy?
Goal intimacy, sharing dreams, sharing goals together.
Together, done together and having that mutual understanding.
Time is necessary. Yeah. So they're all interlinked. Intimacy financial intimacy.
Yes. What is yours is mine. What is mine is mine. This intimacy.
Yeah, so if we think of intimacy not as just sexual intimacy, I think we will put more effort into the other aspects as well. Because what we realize when we deal with guys especially, more so for the guys in doing marriage training, guys only in their minds... intimacy is sexual intimacy. The rest is like not priority. As long as sexual intimacy is good, I think my marriage is great. That tends to be the equation. But I realize when we work with the ladies, that's not the priority. It is important, but it's not the number one thing. Because for the woman, it seems like all the other kinds of intimacy just as important.
So especially emotional intimacy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there was this cliche, I think at one point of time, sex begins in the kitchen. You know, so men took it literally,
so
like
kinky.
Yeah, you know, and then you go to the kitchen, and while the wife is like preparing for dinner, then he starts making his moves. But actually, the point of that was to say that especially to the husbands, right? If you want sexual intimacy with your wife, you need to, you know, really start working it out by talking to her about her day while she's in the kitchen preparing for dinner. You go in and help out.
Yes, huge.
Correct. And you're there with her. You're not just sitting on the couch outside waiting for dinner to be served, right? And then after it's served, you expect sexual intimacy to just like that happen, you know? Yeah, so, or the one that I think Gary likes to tell husbands that if you want to have sex, like on the weekend, you start preparing.
On Monday. No, because it is the mood, it is the atmosphere, it's all the other forms of intimacy that is important.
Exactly. And I would think, Gary, as a guy, you would agree that when you have done all of that, the sexual intimacy is different in quality even, right? Rather than, oh, it's not.
I would like to say it's not but I think it's more than just sexual intimacy, because the closeness and appreciation, I think you just sense the happiness in the relationship.
Exactly. So it's different because any activity can be extremely functional.
Correct.
And the wife can put up with it. But it's the whole closeness.
Correct.
And both men and women can feel that. There's that difference whether you are really close to your partner or you're not.
That's right.
And it takes both people to contribute to that closeness.
There's a difference between, I think, the sexual act and sexual intimacy.
Right.
You know, if you just look at it as, oh, it's just the behavior of, like, you know, having intercourse and, okay, we've done it. Right, then actually you could have the sexual act but devoid of intimacy. And so one of the things that I think we have also learned is that if we begin to see, you know, even sexual intimacy, if we don't look at it as the act itself but really love, I mean, one of the other terms is love making, right? And when you make love, right, it's not just about the behavior, the physical behavior, but it's about connection. It's about the feeling of being loved and appreciated for who I am, you know, for even being appreciated for my body, whatever it is, you know, especially after childbirth, right? And so if we approach it from, you know, lovemaking, then everything becomes lovemaking because you're seeding into, you know, the love relationship. With even all the little things that you do in marriage, through the errands that you take the trouble to do for your spouse, you know, the time that you take to just sit down and talk and listen. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so everything becomes lovemaking.
So we need to educate a lot more so the guys than the ladies when it comes to this, because like I said earlier, a guy can get excited very, very quickly, you know, instantaneously. He can be having a high fever and still be ready for intimacy, you know, any moment. After an argument, ready for intimacy, sexual intimacy. But for the ladies, it doesn't seem to function that way. So equipping guys, preparing them and getting them to realize that intimacy really is more than just the act of sex itself is valuable.
Yeah, and I think it's because you know, when husbands don't take the time to recognize that just simply the way God wired men versus women, women are generally, you know, just more into like emotional oneness rather than physical oneness, even in terms of like our sexual response, right? Men, like what Gary said, are more quickly initiated. But for women, we take some time to brew, and we need to be allowed that time. And I think for many wives, you know, the wives that we've spoken to, sometimes we don't enjoy sexual intimacy or lovemaking as much because, you know, if the guy goes with his quick initiation and then he's done, you know, and he's happy, right? Yeah, and for the wives, then we take it as like, oh, I fulfilled my marital obligation. It becomes just functional, right? Yep. And really, that isn't how God designed it to be. God designed that pleasure is enjoyed by both husband and wife.
And in fact, like, I want to rock back to this idea you said earlier about lovemaking. I think it's good to redeem that word because it's a beautiful word. And really, I think in sexual intimacy, it's also about honoring each other's need for pleasure, right?
Yeah.
And therefore offering yourself there as a gift to the other person. And if you focus on the other person's pleasure and the other person's gift to you, the body as a gift to you, for you to express your ability to give yourself to someone and make love in that sense, then I think that mindset shift can be quite consequential, quite effective for the experience, right? Versus, but right. It's tough because in our world, we really, the messages we get every day is go get what you want, go after it. If you don't have it, go look somewhere else and all that, you know.
Definitely, it's counterculture. And as Christians, I think we need to make it our goal in sexual intimacy that to outplease each other as husband and wife. Then it becomes, like you said, other-centered.
Yeah, there is a scripture verse about outdoing one another in good works, right? Suppose we could stretch it to apply to this. Why not? Yeah. So if we talked about the need for the church to speak about this subject matter, what would be some ways we can talk about it? Like you earlier mentioned, Joanna, I mean, we grew up in church mostly thinking of sex as something not to defile ourselves about, you know, stay pure. And indirectly, we begin to sort of plaster something negative about it and is then devoid of how can God be happy about something that will defile me, you know.
That's
so
right.
I think the whole idea of why sex is like dangerous or defilement, I think we need to find a new vocabulary. What can you share some ideas you would have for us?
I mean, it's basically how we communicate sex even from when the person is young from the children's ministry to the youth ministry. It just has to be from day one, you know, be comfortable talking. Mm-hmm. So parents need to be equipped, first of all, to talk about sex. The church needs to be comfortable talking about sex because it is a wonderful thing created by God. And never to say, you know, it's bad. It is actually very good, created by God. But for the, you know, within the confines of marriage, that is when God intended it for. And to explain that, hey, it's a wonderful thing. It's not a bad thing. I think when our vocabulary changes, people's understanding, it is a wonderful thing. For marriage, kept for marriage, keeping the marriage bed pure. Explain the rationale why God did those things, like why God mentioned those things, keeping the marriage bed pure rather than God just doesn't want you to have fun. You know, because that's how it's communicated. So we are bombarded by those messages. But if we are comfortable talking about it, I do not need, the youth do not need to seek information from elsewhere.
Which currently they're doing.
Yeah, the children do not need to get information from elsewhere because they are very comfortable with the whole topic about sex because the Creator God, my God, is the one who created sex.
Yeah. Yeah, we actually tell our son that he's the product of our love.
Mm.
Yeah, and that was something that, you know, even when he was, I think, too young to really understand the biology behind reproduction, yeah. We already told him that you are the product of mommy and daddy's love.
Mm.
Yeah, and I think that's a good way to position
yes.
what sex is supposed to be. Mm. Yeah, that it is, it has such powerful outcomes in the form of, you know, a child that is the product of, you know, the intimacy between husband and wife. Like I said, the highest form of intimacy. And we have to redeem that. And really, it starts a lot with conversations.
Mm.
So we need to have more conversations about this in natural settings and not feel ashamed about it. Because yeah. I think the more, I know it's like sort of a taboo topic, right? In firstly, our very conservative Asian culture. But at the same time, if you look at the media, which is one click away today, I mean, people don't even watch TV. It's like all on the internet, right? They are talking about it in very sometimes dishonoring ways and
yes.
in ways where sex is positioned as, you know, anytime, no obligations, no commitment, and no boundaries, right? And if there are any boundaries, the boundaries are bad versus the boundaries are there to keep us safe and to allow us to enjoy sex as it was meant to be. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I remember doing a talk for parents and their teenagers on sex, and I said, "Is sex good?" And this 13-year-old teenager sitting in front, she just shouted, "No!" And I said, "How come?" And she pointed to her mother beside. My mother says it's bad, and the mother could just see her sliding down the chair. But that's the reality. A lot of us don't know how to even talk about it. So the whole culture and understanding within the church portrays sex as, you know, don't talk about it, you're too young. But once attraction, once hormones all start developing, you know, for the attraction comes in, the church must be the first place that they seek.
Yeah, and if you're comfortable talking about it, I think even, you know, at an early age, when you get married as a couple, you find that it's also easier to talk about your sexual needs, which we have to actually encourage couples to do and to find vocabulary to do so.
Yeah, I think a lot of couples may say it's easier to tell you my schedule, easier to tell you my work plans, easier to discuss the children's needs.
Yeah.
But our personal needs, especially sexual needs, can become very difficult.
Correct.
Just, yeah, you're right. No vocabulary to talk about.
Yeah.
I mean, am I right to ask you to do this or to do that?
A very simple one would be your sexual organs, right? If you can't even call it what it is, and, you know, we use all these terms when we're kids, right? Which sounds a bit derogatory or like, you already feel like a bit awkward saying it. And can you imagine if you need to communicate your sexual needs and you're addressing your body parts with some of these terms? I mean, it's just firstly not romantic. Secondly, you know, it turns sex into like, instead of something that is enjoyable, pleasurable, natural outcome of intimacy in marriage, it becomes something that's awkward. And yeah, you might even feel shameful talking about.
True. So, you know, this whole not being comfortable, I always have this suspicion that, I don't know whether it's the nature of the church or it's just nature of Singaporeans, because we're so performance oriented that when we feel like we don't have things together, we don't feel comfortable talking about it, we don't feel ready. Like people say, I'm not ready to serve, and you know, so maybe pastors have struggles in their own marriage and parents are struggling in their marriage, so then they feel like, well, I haven't got my act together, how am I going to tell the next generation? You know, can you speak into that?
I think it's an ongoing thing. I think the mentality, not just on sexual intimacy, parents think, my child needs to grow in the faith. I expect the 2 hours in church to be the key to making my child grow, you know, spiritually.
Yeah, because they are not the expert,
correct.
Right?
Let's pass them to the expert. It's an ongoing journey that we realize that I have my child more than anyone else.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I have my wife more than anyone else. It's not those 2 hours. I expect the pastor who is trained in spiritual matters. Can I expect him to be also a sexpert in everything? You know, the church, if the pastor is not comfortable, then make sure we have people in the church who are mature, maybe a little more experienced, to disciple, train, equip, so that all of us are in this journey together rather than I'm not ready and I don't think I ever will. So we get comfortable with ourselves. As we grow, we understand and we become a little more comfortable. I think for Joanne and I, when we first started talking about it, obviously we weren't comfortable. But I think the more you communicate about it, the more you talk about it, you just feel you know, it's comfortable.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and it's a real need. I mean, as you communicate, you realize that people will resonate because you are talking about something that's real, that's practical, that is deep and meaningful for many people, right?
But I think today, people in general, and particularly for the younger generation, they're really looking at authenticity. You know, about just being real about who you are and versus perfection.
Yeah,
and I think that's a good place and a great encouragement for us to come out and start talking about these things. I mean, we've shared about our own like our own sexual history for one, you know, and how that plays into our attitudes towards relationships, towards marriage, and even towards sex. I usually share about how in my upbringing, you know, typical family lah, my dad doesn't talk about such things. My mom will, you know, tell you about how sex is dirty and painful and whatnot. And actually, those were the attitudes I took into marriage, right? And then as a couple, we had to learn how to deal with those attitudes, how to talk about it, you know, how to talk about, or even to say that, you know, I feel a little bit apprehensive or even scared, like my wedding night, right? Like what's going to happen? I mean, our wedding night, we tell couples that much as you see in Hollywood is like fireworks and everything, but we spend our wedding night counting money.
Ang paus develop intimacy in a different way, I guess.
Money and financial intimacy.
You know, but you know, there's this expectation that, wow, the wedding night is going to be the best, right? And we tell couples that actually the best sex really for us is today. And it gets better as we grow as a couple, as a married couple, as we grow in intimacy, as we learn to appreciate each other, you know, as we also learn to better communicate our needs.
So I think that the journey begins by realizing I'm not adequate in this. I need to do something about it. And then be intentional. Read a book if you're not comfortable talking to someone, then or talk to someone, you know, but do something rather than just expect the church to be the one that solves your problems.
I guess taking ownership of the situation and learning and, you know, and just growing yourself. And even let's say if as a couple you are struggling, but you have growing children who need to understand these things, there's nothing wrong with taking the child to something to learn together, read a book together and talk about it. Yeah. It doesn't mean that we have to have our act together and, you know, be 100% perfect before we can say something to our kids.
And a couple of years ago, I decided to take my son for a short holiday and we got some material, Christian material, where we talked about not just sex itself, but relationship, peers, the influence he would experience as a teenager. And sex was obviously one of the things that he had to deal with. So discussion was just father and son just talking through those things. And he asked questions. Most of the time, he just remained silent, just listening because it was...
Like, Dad, what are you talking about?
Yeah, but I think... And that's when I shared about my past, shared about my mistakes, shared about, you know, the journey of relationship with mom. And he just got to hear and there were questions. But it was very structured and there were questions that were involved. I didn't have to think so hard because obviously others have done this. And we just discussed, he asked, we talked, he answered, and I think that helped also.
Wow, that is actually an amazing thing to do, both for sons and daughters, as they are turning into, they are reaching puberty, right? Because it's a very confusing time for them. And just for them to hear that, okay, mom and dad may have a different experience from me, they live in a different era, but they are taking time out, they notice that I'm going through this very tumultuous time. They're sharing their experience. Yeah. So, yeah, bonding deeper.
Yeah.
And they just feel so safe.
Because, and I just want to say this because before Gary Wen brought our son on this one-on-one trip, actually, they were having a bit of tension and friction between them because, you know, our son was in that stage. Right? And he's trying to individuate and whatnot. And for some reason, it was more with Gary rather than with me. And so I think for many parents we talk to, sometimes you think that, oh, because, you know, it's easy for us to say because we already have a good relationship. But we also, you know, do experience these tensions relating to our child. And I must say that despite that, they went. And when they came back, right, it was a very obvious difference that I noticed the moment I saw them. Because, you know, our son, whose love language is touch, that's one of his primary love languages, he was like hugging Gary, you know, and yeah, and it was something that, I mean, even hugging, kissing, right? Yeah, it was something that, you know, before the trip, And the trip was only, what, one week? Yeah, before the trip, he wouldn't do.
Mm.
Yeah, and, you know, it was almost magic. Mm. Yeah, so I really want to encourage parents to try it, even if you think that, you know, but my relationship with my child, don't know whether my child would do it or not. Just go for it. You know, just book that
exactly,
trip, whether it's a short cruise, whether it's but get away. Yeah,
and just invest in the relationship.
Yeah, and just say that, hey, but I really booked it, so you just come, right? And then maybe bring something with you. So in this case, what did you use? I can't remember. Technon, something from Generations of Virtue.
There's plenty of resources out there, and I think if you go to the Focus on the Family website, or get in touch with the counselor, or many of the pastors would know how to point people in the right direction with these resources.
Definitely.
I think we're very blessed in Singapore. We have a ton of resources.
We just need to use them.
So literally, we just need to step up to the plate, take ownership, and just stare that fear of inadequacy or the pain of a hurting relationship.
Mm.
Just brave it. Lean into it and say, you know, I still believe God's going to be with me in this.
Mm.
I still believe something good come out of this. I still believe that God's vision of life is better than whatever I currently have.
Yep, definitely.
And sow into that. And I believe, like you say, magic can happen.
Yeah.
So thank you very much for coming to talk with us.
Thanks for having us.
Gary and Joe.
Thank you for listening in. We hope you've been encouraged with some new thoughts on faith and life integration. You can find us on the Cathedral app, iTunes, Spotify, or at cathedral.org.sg/podcast. Be sure to join us again.